I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Mexico and the United States have been described as distant neighbors, but the two nations have become critically important trading partners to each other. But it's not clear if President Donald Trump knows that, as he's been promising massive tariffs on Mexico and threatening to invade. What does the relationship with Mexico and the U.S. look like today and in the future? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
TPR tells the stories of our city, our struggles and our triumphs. Leaving a legacy gift to Texas Public Radio helps keep those stories alive. Find out how to create your legacy at tpr.org/legacy.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The relationship between the United States and Mexico has always been complex, shaped by trade, immigration, security, and culture. But right now, the relationship could be said to be under serious strain. New U.S. tariffs, disputes over migration, tensions at the border, threats of invasion by Donald Trump have raised questions about the future of this crucial partnership. Mexico is America's largest trading partner and a key ally in managing migration and security challenges. So any disruption carries major consequences on both sides of the border. To help us understand the state of U.S.-Mexico relations, what's driving the current friction, what could happen next, we're joined by Karthik Sirkaran. He is a senior research fellow in geoeconomics in the Global South Program at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. And Karthik, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
What would you say, how would you describe the current relationship between the United States and Mexico?
I would describe it as in a complicated, but also, and this is, I'd say, you know, somewhat optimistic sign, better than I would have expected. And that's because, you know, we had a, you know, already before the 2016 election, there were certain comments made by, you know, during the campaign that were targeted at Mexico. But then we ended up with somehow President Trump and Andres Manuel López Obrador, AMLO, actually getting along reasonably well and concluding an update to NAFTA, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, now USMCA, that was, I would argue, favorable in some respects. And once again, I mean, everyone would have thought that coming into this administration, the contrast between Claudia Sheinbaum and Donald Trump, kind of personally, ideologically, overlaying that on the various frictions that you mentioned, would have been extremely problematic. And of course, you know, there are these frictions. That said, by way of comparison, I would suggest comparing how relations have gone with Canada, with which the U.S. had a trade pact that precedes, that kind of precedes NAFTA relationship, the relationship with Canada and with Prime Minister Mark Carney there is quite bad. Tariffs on Canada are 35%. And kind of within the Latin American ideological spectrum, I would think that Lula, the president of Brazil, occupies a roughly similar space in terms not just of where they stand on the local political spectrum, but also in terms of their being seen as exemplars of a more independent, a more feisty global South. And here too, the relationship with Brazil has proved much more problematic. There are 50% tariffs on Brazil. There are all these issues surrounding, former Brazilian President Bolsonaro, So I would think if you place all that in context, that's why I think this is actually going better than one would have thought, which is not to say there aren't issues, but and I think that's the one reason is because President Sheinbaum seems to have managed the relationship quite well at an interpersonal level. And conversely, I think President Trump seems to have a fairly good relationship and also recognizes the economic importance of Mexico. So I think both of those may contribute to this being, as I said, not as disastrous as one might have thought, though there are still many things to work out.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or comment about U.S. relations with Mexico, particularly our business relationship, but not just limited to that, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So here's the thing that puzzles me, Karthik, about what's going on with the United States, Mexico, and also Canada. So we're in this global trade war, but really the focus is should be on China and the trade situation that the United States has with China and trying to decouple that relationship. That seems to be the primary motivation or whatever the strategy I would think that a lot of people have with the United States trying to deal with China. If that is the end goal, to maintain the strength of the U.S. relationship, I mean, to our economy, not sacrifice our economic growth and development as we decouple with China, then we ought to be becoming closer with Mexico and Canada and operate the trade bloc that we have, the North American trade bloc, more closely and not antagonize our two neighbors, but we're focusing on Mexico. And it seems because, as you know, there's all this talk of reshoring to Mexico, the factories of China, and to that we can have a much stronger economy if we're closer with Mexico. But on the surface, that's not what we're getting from Trump. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I would, I think about this in terms of there are different constituencies within the administration on trade, and one of the, there are what are called the reshorers, which is a term I apply solely to the United States, which is to bring everything back to all manufacturing back to the United States, and that includes what went overseas, what went south of the border following the NAFTA agreement in
So
1994.
manufacturing, textiles, all those things.
All those things, particularly auto parts manufacturing, and there is a constituency that wants that, and I call those reshorers. So for those people, it's not enough to bring everything closer to the United States. And back from China or from Southeast Asia more broadly, it is important that those things be relocated in the US itself. Then there is the kind of more geopolitical context that says, okay, what we really want to do is just have a very geographically insecure, resilient supply chain that's also good for that's also good for security. You're not crossing an ocean, you don't have to worry about things like the pandemic and so on.
And you work well with that government.
Exactly. So, that's one of the that's the nearshoring agenda, and one of the domestic tensions within the United States, I think, is between the nearshorers and the
So the
reshorers. But then there are a
nearshoring would
couple.
be like Mexico. That's near. So
Yeah,
basically,
exactly.
you're just a truck right away or a train.
And when you hear all these complaints about how the U.S. doesn't do shipbuilding anymore, how all these ships that are coming in are actually are actually manufactured in are manufactured in East Asia, predominantly China right now. This idea of nearshoring gets around all of those issues. The problem is one of the problems is that runs up against the desire to reshore
Right.
and to bring back that plant that was
Well, there's,
primarily located in
I
the
mean,
upper
there's got to be
Midwest.
some practical elements that doesn't just doesn't make sense for a lot of things. But let's take a break here. We're going to take a 1 minute break. We're going to continue this conversation talking about the U.S.-Mexico relationship. Should we even be coming closer with Mexico, not drive them further apart. Is that happening right now? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about this redistricting map that the Republicans have come up with for Texas, and will it actually hold in a blue wave election? Could this actually be dummy mandering? And we'll get into what that word means when we get into that next conversation. But right now we're talking about U.S.-Mexico's relationship. And this is a relationship that is based on economics. And it's about trade, jobs, money moving back and forth between these two countries. It's been very beneficial for both nations. And is that an advantage that President Trump should be trying to leverage? Or is he just trying to now he's not interested in maintaining that relationship? Give us a call. What your take is, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we're speaking with Karthik Sankaran, and he is a senior research fellow in geoeconomics at the Global South Program at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. So Karthik, we were saying, U.S.-Mexico relationship, we have a good thing going here. It could be a lot better if we're trying to take on the world economically with tariffs and stuff. We could leverage our relationship with Mexico to strengthen the United States' hand. Is that what – but Trump doesn't seem to be doing that, at least publicly. So help me figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think some of this is kind of just an internal dispute. They're trying to figure out this balance between how much of our industry is located in North America versus how much of it is relocated back into the U.S. itself. But there are a couple of other issues. There are a couple of other things here that's part of the whole tariff agenda. There's also the idea that tariffs, the sole purpose of tariffs, is not to force people to, reshore into the United States. The purpose might just be revenues, in which case you want to set the revenues at a you want to set the tariffs at a
right.
level.
So first of all, let's go. This is what Donald Trump says. Okay, first of all, he has declared a state of emergency, giving himself extreme tariff powers over fentanyl. That's the public thing. That's his legal hinge that he's using for this, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a few different ones. That is one of them that's been applied kind of on the southern border with the recent escalation to the north. Being that thing specifically, there's also what a more kind of structured process around the auto industry in particular, which is not dependent on this emergency declaration, and that is it's called a 232. Those are technicalities, but you know what's happening right now is in the quest to just maybe to maximize tariff revenues, we have set tariffs on Europe, Japan, on the EU, Japan, and Korea at 15%, including autos, which is below the 30% on Mexico. Now, there are exemptions to that based on what is, there are parts in strong that are NAFTA compliant, but on the face of it, this is a real problem for the idea that we want to reshore, because what you're doing is giving parties from outside the immediate geographic area a lower tariff rate in what you've said is a key industry for national security, which is cars. And that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, precisely because one of the ideas of having this national security motivation for auto tariffs is that you kind of protect and privilege the North American supply chain. And the big three, GM, Ford, and Chrysler Stellantis, they are They all have plants, you know, north of the border, south of the border. There were all these stories about how, you know, a single car part may cross the border six, seven, eight times.
Sure, like your seatbelt is back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, but to the larger question, okay, so with the United States and Mexico, it's been beneficial. We've seen the Mexican economy get better and better, stronger and stronger over the years. Doesn't it make sense for the United States to have a strong Mexico economy? It doesn't help the United States to beat Mexico down and back into poverty, does it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely not. I would agree very strongly with the idea that the U.S. is helped by a strong Mexican economy. And one of the things I point to here is my background is actually in the markets. And one of the things that I've seen over, you know, kind of the 3 decades or so that I've been in before I did this, I used to be a trade foreign exchange and analyze foreign exchange markets. And one of the things that stands out to me is the way in which NAFTA and then USMCA basically made Mexico look far more industrial and much less like the other economies of Latin America, which are much more focused on commodity exports. This is a Mexico, on the other hand, is deeply interlinked with American industrial supply chains. There's this idea that a complex economy is one that can do lots and lots of things. And Mexico has become an increasingly complex economy. And what that's done is that it's taken it further away from the kinds of, you know, periodic foreign exchange crises or debt crises that continue to bedevil places like Argentina, for instance. So you've had this massive shift in the very structure of the Mexican economy that has been very beneficial for them and also very beneficial for us, I think, both on the economic front and on the security front. I mean, there are obviously concerns, but even so, we do not have kind of a country undergoing, you know, periodic economic disasters immediately south of the border, which we used to have,
you know, massive peso devaluations and all sorts of issues. But, you know, think about Mexico. Mexico does not want to be the United States' vassal state. It doesn't want to be a subordinate to the United States. And I think that's, you know, that's a reasonable expectation, you know, but I don't know if that's going to communicate well. It does seem like President Sheinbaum is able to talk to Donald Trump and explain to him in a way that how important these two countries are to each other, and to disrupt that relationship would disrupt the U.S. economy. And so that's why we're probably seeing we had another 90-day extension before these 30% tariffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall. As I was saying, some of the urgency and the importance of this relationship seems to have communicated quite well. She's done a number of other things to kind of, you know, on the non-economic side to assuage concerns. You know, she extradited those 29 narcos very early on. She has been kind of very interestingly insistent on Mexico's sovereignty on certain issues, but also signaled a willingness to cooperate. And that again is something that seems to be that seems to be holding right now.
She's helping on immigration.
Yes, absolutely. So there are multiple things where she's treading this very fine line between the importance of Mexican sovereignty, which obviously is a very big deal in Mexico. And while
the people of Mexico, this is something that people respond to, given the number of invasions that the United States has done to Mexico, and the sovereignty is critical issue.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think there's been, she's done a remarkably good job. And one of the things that we're going to see is, you know, because part of the issue has also been that Canada and Mexico have been pushed to the back of the line. They get hit by tariffs sporadically, but the USMCA, the trade treaty, is up for review, and that review needs to be completed by July 1st, 2026, and that process is probably going to get started sometime in September. So I think that's kind of where the rubber is going to meet the road on how you renegotiate all these fine points around reshoring versus nearshoring, what the tariff levels are. Should Mexico and the United States cooperate to do things like bring more of the electronics manufacture that is now in Southeast Asia and East Asia, bring that into Mexico, which would benefit Mexico because give it another another area of industrialization, and also be good for the United States. So
would they be opening new markets for U.S. investment in Mexico? I mean, so there's a lot of U.S. dollars invested in Mexico, and the people who have made those investments, they don't want to see, you know, the market crushed, that relationship, you know, made turbulent.
And there are more markets potentially open, right? Because Mexico does, one of the issues for Mexico right now is power supply. There are, Texas is now a major supplier of natural gas to Mexico. And Texas is, you know, as I'm sure you know, Texas is Mexico's largest trading partner within the United States. So there are a great many things that Mexico needs that could be supplied by the United States. And energy is a critical part of this because Mexico is energy short. The U.S. has expertise. The fracking expertise transfers quite easily into geothermal. That's something that that we could be helping with, because if Mexico is going to deepen its industry, it needs more predictable power, and that's one of the things that the U.S. can do. Texas is also, you know, for whatever the rhetoric, Texas is one of the United States' leaders in renewables and solar. So that's another kind of thing that could be.
So let's go back to the original question about how would you describe the relationship with Mexico? With all that being said, it does certainly seem like you would think it would be on the rocks, but actually it's not too bad. Maybe, you know, there have been some dust ups, but Mexico seems to be doing a really good job at talking to, managing, getting Donald Trump to understand how important these two countries, how well they work, they can work together.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is much better than one would have thought, and I certainly hope that continues into this next critical period, which is going to be the USMCA review. You know, one of the arguments that we've made is that there are great opportunities for mutual benefit on both sides. And if the U.S. is going to use the occasion of the review to put some pressure on Mexico to do certain things, it would probably be much better to do it in those areas that both sides recognize are of mutual benefit, like energy, for instance. There may be some reticence on their side because of the historical legacy of Pemex and so on, you know, but there are workarounds. There are ways to make this relationship deeper, and we should take that, is kind of my big point,
and
I so guess.
And
we have the opportunity.
What would be
to
the
that?
Advantage for South Texas in that? You know, as the United States and Mexico, I mean, it seemed like we would become even greater linked, and there are the opportunities here.
Yeah. I mean, there's a border economy on both sides. One of the things that's very interesting, you know, is if you look at the history of U.S. automobile manufacturing, for instance.
The maquiladoras, all those things.
They all have counterparts right across the border. Yeah. So there's a very substantial, you know, one thinks of the, you know, U.S. auto manufacturing originally as a upper Midwestern thing, and then you have some of the transplants on the In the
so there's opportunities along the border.
Texas is big.
All right. Karthik Sukuran, thank you so much. Senior Research Fellow, Geoeconomics at the Global South Program at Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.